This is a special edition of Macro Voices with hedge fund manager Eric Townsend, the premier financial podcast targeting professional finance, high net worth individuals, family offices, and other sophisticated investors. Now, for this special edition of Macro Voices, here's hedge fund manager Eric Townsend.
Macro Voices All-Stars, episode 102, was recorded on April 20th, 2020. I'm Eric Townsend. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars is brought to you by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast when it comes to quant and rules-based investing. I'll tell you how to claim a free copy of their new guide to the best investing books ever written at the end of this episode. Joining me today is Louis Vincent Gav, co-founder of GavCal. Louis, I feel like everybody is so focused on, okay, peak infections, we seem to be past that point, there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and I agree with that, that's great. But it seems like everybody's focused on, okay, so now the economy is going to get restarted and the V-shaped recovery starts now. I'm not sure that I'm persuaded that we're really going to have a V-shaped recovery. What do you think? What are the major issues that we should watch for, and what do you see on the horizon?
Well, look, let me. I was talking with a friend of mine earlier today, and he's a big dairy producer in France, and he was telling me that, you know, usually in France for 1,000 liters of milk, when you sell it wholesale to, you know, cheese makers or yogurt makers or whatever else, you get anywhere from 250 to 350 euros. Right now, he's getting €1 per 1,000 liters, which obviously doesn't cover his costs. Now, of course, I'm using this as an analogy for what we're seeing in oil right now. What's happening in France is that all your local cheese producers, your local yogurt producers, et cetera, none of them are working. And to your point, the big question is, okay, when things get back on stream, are these guys, A, able to get back to work, or B, are they just bankrupt and gone? If they're just bankrupt and gone, this leaves, of course, more concentration of power into big hands. So, if, for example, if you're Danone today, you're probably loving the fact that you can buy oil at €1 per 1,000 liters. And if you're Danone, you're probably turning around. And if your competitors are going out of business, then that means you'll be able to raise your prices on milk, on yogurt, and on cheese, etc., on the other side as well. So you could win both sides. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is, look, we know that we're going through the biggest economic shock potentially ever. To a large degree, this was a self-inflicted shock. So it's a very unusual shock. We don't have really any historical precedent. And as we go through, you know, we're sort of now entering almost 2 months into this unprecedented economic shock. What's been interesting is we have had no bankruptcies. We've had no high-profile businesses go bust. Now, this could be, of course, because governments have thrown money at the problem, because central banks are throwing money at the problem, et cetera. But fundamentally, you know, capitalism without bankruptcy is like Christianity without hell. You know, it just doesn't work as a concept. So if we have the biggest economic dislocation, you know, the big question I think we should be asking ourselves is, you know, where are the bankruptcies going to be? Are they going to be in the oil space? Well, that seems pretty obvious, right? The oil industry wasn't built over the past 10 years and didn't gear up to have a world of sub $20 oil. Are we going to see, you know, political revolutions? Because, you know, in France, as an example, farmers aren't going to take too kindly a world where they get paid €1 per 1,000 liters for their milk. They're going to take their pitchforks and they're going to, you know, go to Paris and on the shelf. I mean, at least if history is any indication. So I think, you know, I'm working on a piece right now where I'm thinking, okay, what are the potential tail risks out there? And, you know, what are the potential implosions? Now, usually when the system gets stressed, historically, you know, one of the first things you see is fixed exchange rate systems implode. Today, there aren't a lot of fixed exchange rates in the world. You have, of course, Hong Kong, and you and I have discussed in the past why I don't believe the Hong Kong peg is a fragile currency peg and why I don't think it's going to blow up. You have, of course, the Saudi peg. If you go back to 2015, 2016, I think that was a fairly popular hedge fund short to short the Saudi real. That didn't work. The question is, you know, is it so nobody's got that trade on today, or very few people have that trade on today, when arguably, you know, the conditions for Saudi Arabia today are much tougher than they were back in 2015. So, you know, I think that one's going to come back to the fore. And of course, you get to the ultimate exchange rate system, which is the euro, and the ultimate tail risk out there, which is the fact that we've built an economic system in Europe that has basically put into debtor's prison half of the European population. And half of this European population, whether the Italians, the Spaniards, the French, et cetera, that is now clamoring to be let out of debtor's prison. And so I think, you know, Europe is at an interesting juncture at this point. Does A, Europe change its rules and accept fiscal union? Or does it say, okay, well, we tried and it doesn't work, so let's unwind this thing? I think that's obviously the biggest tail risk out there, but that's one that is increasingly starting to emerge as the tensions within Europe continue to flare up.
Quite a few analysts are predicting that once we're through the heat of the crisis, if you will, with the virus, that probably a lot of attention will turn to placing blame. And a lot of people have predicted that the China-U.S. trade relationship is going to break down badly as a result of more and more Americans and to some extent the American government starting to take a slightly different tone, saying, hey, maybe this thing really was kind of China's fault for the way they handled dissemination of information. Maybe they could have been more forthcoming. Maybe then the rest of the world wouldn't have gone through nearly as big of a crisis as it has. Do you think that we're headed toward a breakdown of U.S.-China relations? And if so, what does it mean for markets?
I think the question is how big of a breakdown? We're going to get the breakdown. The relationship was breaking down before this. Now, the reality is pretty much every Western government, whether you take France, whether you take the U.K., whether you take the U.S., etc., was caught with their pants down on this one. There was basically terrible preparation to the pandemic. When it first came around, whether it's Macron, whether it's Trump, et cetera, everybody said, don't worry about it. This isn't a big thing. Don't worry about it. We've got lots of masks and gloves and et cetera. We're well prepared. Then the thing comes around and they say, we don't have the masks. We don't have the gloves. But anyway, the masks don't serve a purpose. The masks do serve a purpose and we don't have any. Anyway, Western governments have fumbled big time on this. And, you know, I think the natural human reaction when something bad happens, the first thing you do is you turn around and say, who did this to me? You know, it's much easier to say who did this to me than to look inwardly and say, okay, how did I mess up? Now, you know, you're a trader, you know this well. The natural reaction when something bad happens is to look for somebody else to blame. And when you're trading, you know, obviously good traders know that actually when they mess up, they try to learn from their mistakes. Okay, how did I mess this one up? Let's try not to do that one again. But here, of course, you know, the politicians will turn around and say, okay, who did this to me? Obviously, China did this to me. China's a bad actor. So, no, I think the breakdown of the relationship with China. And again, it was breaking down before this, but it's going to be full force. Now, the big question is, what does that mean down the road? Now, you know, in the world I live in, the world that I've analyzed for the past 20 years, the books I've written, China was the biggest deflationary force out there for 20 years. And, you know, the big deflationary force in the world was that China basically offered to the world first world infrastructure at third world prices. And that's also one of the reasons, and I wrote about that in my book, Too Different for Comfort, back in 2012. That's one of the reasons the whole plans of QE that we did early on in last decade didn't turn out to be inflationary, because at the same time, China was doing massive infrastructure spending. So, you know, if you were producing in China in 2006, 2007, that meant that you were producing either in Shenzhen or in Shanghai, basically. If you had a factory in China, that's where it was. Following the creation of those motorways, following the creation of those high-speed railroads, all of which were a direct consequence of the 2008 crisis and China's massive stimulus bill for infrastructure following the 2008 crisis. All of a sudden, in 2010, 2011, 2012, you can put your factory in Wuhan or in Chongqing or in Zhangzhou. You can put it like wherever in China and still get the goods in and out fairly easily. If we're now saying, look, we want to cut back from trade with China, which I do think will be the end result of this. We want to cut back from trade with China. We need to reshore a lot of our production. Then, in essence, instead of bringing in 500 million Chinese workers into the global economy, we're pushing them out again. Personally, I think that's massively inflationary on two fronts. First, because we have to rebuild the entire production chains in our country. So that's one stream of demand. And then secondly, of course, we're going to do it with a much more expensive workforce. So that's a second inflationary stream. So, you know, let's make no mistake about it. This crisis marks the end of globalization. You see it so well in the fact that every, in essence, multilateral institution in the world is now completely discredited. The WHO discredited, European Union discredited, IMF, egg all over its face following Argentina's default a couple of weeks ago. You know, if you go back to the 2008 crisis, the big result of the 2008 crisis was the G20. That was, you know, the big countries of the world said, let's get together. We're all in this together. And we're going to get through this together and create global solutions to a global problem. Now, today, we have the prime example of a global problem. I mean, what is less global than the pandemic, right? This is as global as it gets. Instead of having a global reaction, everybody, even within the European Union, everybody's basically pulled the covers to themselves and basically in the process, of course, discredited global institutions. So make no mistake about it, we're moving from a globalized world to, you know, a return basically of nation states. For me, globalization was the biggest deflationary force. So if it moves into reverse, that's inflationary.
Louis, just in the time that you were giving that answer, history was made in the crude oil market. Now, we're speaking at about 2:15 right now on Monday afternoon. That's not the last trading day for the May contract. The last trading day for May is not until tomorrow. And as we speak, we literally got to a no-bid situation where there were no bids whatsoever to roll the long positions from May into June. I've never, ever in my trading career seen it. I mean, people use the expression no bid, but this was really and truly no bids. That suddenly, in a matter of instants, caused a gap on the tape, and we got down to minus $7.50, negative $7.50 per barrel is the WTI price right now as we're speaking. That's not some crazy Wyoming sour crude number. That's West Texas Intermediate delivered in Cushing, Oklahoma. They will pay you $7.50 to take it off their hands. It seems to me that we're seeing things happening now that even, you know, I focus on the oil markets. It's what I do. And a lot of people have asked me, what about this negative prices stuff? You know, could that happen to WTI? And even I have been very quick, Louis, to reassure them. Look, they're talking about specific landlocked, grades that you could never see the major benchmark actually tick negative. Louis, in the time that I've asked this long-winded question, we went from $7.50 to $9 negative on the price of WTI crude oil. Actually, 8.61 is the current print as I'm speaking.
Please stop talking. It seems like the more you talk, the more it goes down.
That's it. I'll let you talk. Let's see if you can. Your challenge is to give such an insightful, brilliant Macro Voices answer that by the time you're done speaking, the price of oil is positive again. Go for it, Louis.
Impossible nul n'est tenu, which was Napoleon's saying that nobody should be asked to do the impossible. Look, the reality is, to your point, this is craziness. Yeah, to have WTI in negative territory, you know, you would have probably bet your left hand that this would never happen. And yet here we are, which tells you just how ridiculous the situation we're in today really is. Now, if you think this is impossible, you got to think that a lot of people would have bet against that, that this almost guarantees that we are going to see some genuine, you know, pain, genuine bankruptcies coming out of such prices. It's not feasible any other way. So, you know, it comes back to the question of, okay, as we project ourselves forward, you know, what should we brace ourselves for? There will be bankruptcies. There will be implosions. The question is, where will those take place? What basically hedges do we need to put on and tail risk? Now, you know, what's amazing out of all of this is, of course, this is, you know, this was in a sense so unnecessary. This is the biggest own goal in policy history. When you look at, there's a couple countries, most notably Sweden and Japan, that have decided to buck the trend and didn't decide to put all their citizens under house arrest. And these countries are really faring no worse than the rest of us. And in fact, over the long term, may fare a lot better because they might have built up herd immunity. So look, we live in crazy policy times. We live in crazy economic times. And, you know, at such times, what typically happens is the weakest links go bust. The weakest links break down. The big question today is, who are the weakest link in the system? For me, one of the weakest links is the European Union. And here I would say, you know, oil in negative territory, of course, helps the European Union, most European Union countries tremendously. So that's the good news. The bad news is, if really this is a world war against COVID, which, you know, our policymakers keep on bashing about, world wars typically entail massive regime changes on the other side. You know, World War I saw the end of the Ottoman Empire, the Austrian-Hungarian Empire, the German Empire, the Russian Empire, and new political structures take form. Today, you know, will our existing political structures prove resilient to this current massive economic dislocations? I'm not sure. You know, there's a number of political structures around the world that that are, I think, fairly fragile, and I'm not sure resilient enough to take in this kind of shock. I mean, let's put it this way. If oil stays negative for 3, 4, 5 months, how many oil-producing countries go bust? All of them, maybe? I don't know.
Minus 11, spot 42. So I'm afraid, as brilliant as your answer was, you didn't talk it up. And of course, we should explain for our listeners, this, we're talking about the May contract, which expires tomorrow. And it is a very, very important price. It's not fiction. It's reality. But it doesn't mean that the overall price of oil has completely gone negative. The June contract, as we're speaking, is still trading at about $21. But wow, minus 11 spot 42. And from the looks of things, it'll go even more deeply negative. Tomorrow is the last trading day. That's normally when the collapse happens, if a collapse is going to happen. So it could go even farther into negative territory tomorrow. It's going to be very interesting to watch. 1250 now, just as 12. Okay, it's going. 1277. It keeps going more and more.
Who do you think is getting carried out here? Who do you think is getting crushed?
This is basically, it's about storage. There's no storage left. And
I know there's no storage, but somebody's going to go bust on this, right?
Yeah, Louis, what's going on here is there are longs still in this market that need to liquidate their positions. And normally they sell them to the guys who have storage available. They roll their position from May to June, and the premium they're paying for that roll is basically the cost of storage. The guy who has storage is agreeing to keep his oil in storage rather than delivering it into the market. And what's going on here is the remaining longs in the market are finding there's nobody with storage to liquidate that contract and roll it forward for you. And they're just getting taken to the cleaner. So anybody who was stuck still long the May contract, hoping it was going to bounce back after the roll or something, got taken out here. But it's more of financial bettors than anything else. The real price of oil in terms of, you know, people that want to actually make plans to buy it and deliver it is still $20. It's only minus 13 if you've got a tank to accept delivery right now.
Will we see the same rigmarole in June? Because
my prediction was going to be that the June roll would be a bigger deal than the May roll. So if that is proven right,
the storage may be even more full in June.
Yeah, it will be more full. And I think that the experience of what happened here is going to cause people, I think it'll play out differently. I think you'll get to zero numbers on the June contract
very quickly
before. Wow, minus 20. We just jumped from 14 to minus $23. We're coming about 3 minutes before the close here. And I feel like I'm a sports announcer, you know, calling the play-by-play. 23 spot, minus 23 spot 68. Do I hear 25? There's minus 25 spot 28. Are we going to 30? Louis, give me 30. Do I hear 30? 30? Go on once. 26 spot 24, negative. Oh, my goodness. Wow. If you had been short and had the balls to hold it here, you could have covered your short at minus $28.10 is the low so far. Do I hear 30? Coming up on 28 spot 40. 3 minutes to go to the close. I think we're headed toward past 30. There's 30. That's like 29 spot 98.
The market likes right numbers.
And I mean, there's almost no liquidity left in this market. There's 30. We've got minus $30. So you could be paid $30 for taking free oil, $31 per barrel. And that's putting the spread at more than $50 between the May and the June contract. Absolute oil market history. 33 spot 20, 34 spot 52. I can't even say a number, Louis, before a new one comes up. 34 spot 83, 35 spot 05. Holy cow. And to think that I was proud of myself for closing my May-June spreads out at minus 8, which I thought was just a record number. Minus 35, 37, minus $37, minus 37 spot 11. And we've still got 2 minutes to go before the close. We're not going to drag our listeners through the whole thing. Needless to say, it's a record-making day in the oil market, Louis. Before I let you go, please tell our listeners how they can find out more about what you do at GavCal.
Well, first of all, thanks a lot for having me and, you know, taking the time on this, as you said, historic day. It's hard to pull yourself away from screens when such things are happening. So yes, my website is gavcal.com, GAVEKAL.com. We also have a free newsletter through our private wealth business. It's evergreengavcal.com. So institutional clients can go to gavcal.com, and then people who just want the free newsletter can go to evergreengavcal.com.
Louis, it's great to have you back on Macro Voices All-Stars. We look forward to getting an update from you in a few weeks. This episode of Macro Voices All-Stars was made possible by TopTradersUnplugged.com, the leading podcast on quant and rules-based investing. Be sure to claim your free copy of their recently updated guide to the best investing books ever written at TopTradersUnplugged.com/macro guide. And if you haven't heard it yet, be sure to check out my full-length interview with Niels Kastrup Larsen on trend following strategies, which is linked in your Research Roundup email. For the Macro Voices Podcast Network, I'm Eric Townsend.
That concludes this edition of Macro Voices. Be sure to tune in each week to hear feature interviews with the brightest minds in finance and macroeconomics. Please register your free account at macrovoices.com. Once registered, you'll receive our free weekly Research Roundup email containing links to supporting documents from our featured guests and the very best free financial content our volunteer research team could find on the internet each week. You'll also gain access to our free research library. And the more registered users we have, the more we'll be able to recruit high-profile feature interview guests for future programs. So please register your free account today at macrovoices.com if you haven't already. You can subscribe to Macro Voices on iTunes to have Macro Voices automatically delivered to your mobile device each week free of charge. Macro Voices is presented for informational and entertainment purposes only. The information presented on Macro Voices should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed on Macro Voices are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of the show's hosts or sponsors. Macro Voices, its producers, sponsors, and hosts, Eric Townsend, shall not be liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on Macro Voices.